Welcome to the Father's Day. I am Jesse Lee Peterson. Thank you all so much for being with me. Remember, the best way to support the Father's Day is by joining our membership program on YouTube or go to locals.com and become members. Thank you all so much. And don't forget Punchy's Coffee. I have my own coffee now. Punchy's Coffee. It's available on jesseleepeterson.shop. jesseleepeterson.shop. So I have to tell y'all, I'm a little excited. It takes a lot to get me excited. But I am about to have a discussion with someone I have wanted to have a discussion for a long time to understand how his life and how he has done so well with his business and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to this. I have with me Mike Lindell. He's known as My Pillow Guy. Yes, I am about to talk to My Pillow Guy. Can you believe that? What the? And he is an adventurer, CEO, and the author of the best-selling book of What Are the Odds? From Crack Addict to CEO. Amazing. Mike, thank you again for coming on. I totally appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
And so, Mike, I met you at an event once down in Orange County, California, at a Republican event. And I couldn't believe I'm meeting. I'm like, what is the My Pillow Guy doing here? And prior to that, I didn't know you were a conservative Republican kind of a guy. Were you always conservative?
No. It's a long story, but we'll make it short. I didn't think politics mattered. I was an ex-addict, crack cocaine, gambling, alcohol, you name it. But I was a very functioning addict during a lot of my life. But I didn't think politics mattered. I had never voted in my life. My first time I ever voted was when, on a divine appointment, I met Donald Trump on August 15th of 2016. And I go, well, this guy, I never met a president before, but he'd be great. You know, I talked to his employees and then I voted for him and went all in. I was never back then I didn't know a Democrat from a Republican. I didn't know a filibuster from a millibuster. I knew nothing about politics.
Yeah, that's why I was when I first started out. I had no idea about politics. Right. I had to learn along the way. I noticed that with Donald Trump, you're like all in for him. And why is that, and how did that happen?
Well, you guys, I always get, if you read my book, I always get these in prayer. I get different, I call them, God answers me in prayer and that kind of, and then in December, in May of 2015, I had kind of this dream that I was going to meet Donald Trump. And remember, he hadn't ran for president. And I go, wow, the dream was so vivid. I'm going, why would I meet Donald Trump? I go, I never watched The Apprentice. I gambled at one of his casinos once and lost all my money. But I knew he wrote some book, but I had no idea. You know, I'm going, and why would I want to meet him? Well, then a month later, he announced he was running for president and came down that escalator. Well, I had a very vivid picture in my head, and I even told my board that time, a board of my bill. I said, hey, I had one of my dreams. I said, I'm going to meet Donald Trump, and here's a picture that was taken. And I even drew it out. And so then, you know, as the summer of 2015 rolled into the fall, I ended up on a trip to Israel. I'd never been there before. And I was with this radio group, and I asked the guy on the thing, I said, I figure if I'm going to meet Donald Trump and he's running for president, if this dream comes true, I better find out what politics is all about. Why I question him. What's a Democrat? What's a liberal? What's a conservative? And I looked it up. I Googled this stuff and I was just so amazed. There was such a divide in the sand. It's like, if you're pro-choice, you're here. If you're pro-life, you're here. If you believe this, you're here. I go, that doesn't even make sense. I said, with my friends and stuff, I had talked to them. We didn't ever speak politics. Like, you're over here if you're this, and if you're over here, you have right. to be that.
Yeah.
But I was pretty amazed at that. And then you got to the spring of 2016, and he was having these rallies and stuff. And I know I had a picture of me in a room with him, and in his like his office or something. And it got to be this. So I avoided these rallies and stuff. I never went to a rally, but I still really felt I was going to meet him. And then it got to be the summer of 2016. It was in July, and I was going on. I was doing a movie called Church People, and I left. I got invited to the Republican convention, which was by, you know, like I say, I never voted before. I got right. invited there by just a divine appointment. And while I was there, anyway, I went from there to California. And I remember getting on this plane, and I got this book in the I bought the book in the one of the stores in the airport. It was just a book about Donald Trump, like a magazine. And I was in the bulkhead of this airplane. This guy sitting me next to me that didn't speak English, and I had got up to 10,000 feet, and I had a new phone, and I had just set it so that I would get, if I got an email, it would ding, you know, a sound alert, right? Well, I set my phone, and I got it all, got the Wi-Fi hooked up, and sitting back in my chair there, and I opened up this magazine, and I just kind of got upset, and I shut it. And I remember this is July of 2016, and I said a prayer there, and I said, God, I need to know if I'm supposed to meet Donald Trump or not. I need to know right now. At that moment in time, my phone dinged, and it was an email. Mike, this is Donald Trump. Will you meet me at Trump Tower in New York City? I'm going, what? And I'm going,
amazing.
And now I'm going, God? And I started, I was just all excited. And I'm going, oh, this is a great. And the flight attendant goes, are you okay? I go, yes, it's a miracle. And the guy next to me, he's speaking a foreign language. Like, are you okay? And I'm going, it's a miracle. It wasn't that I was going to meet Donald Trump. It was that my prayer was answered yeah. in real time.
That's
and I was
amazing.
Just, I mean, it just overtook me. And that meeting came to fruition on August 15th. Of 2016, my wife and I, we were engaged at the time. It was 3 a.m. and we're overlooking Central Park. And I just started weeping. I'm going, God, what do I have to do with all this? I just felt this meeting was going to be so important for the future.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any clue. Here's an ex-crack addict, and I didn't know why he wanted to meet me or anything. And I talked to people ahead of time that worked on his staff. They said, whatever you do, don't tell him you're an ex-crack addict. And whatever you do, you're never going to meet him alone. You're going to, you know, that's not. And I said, well, in my dream, that's the way it happened. The next morning at 10 a.m., there was about 8 of us were going in to meet him then. And they all started getting peeled off. It's in my book, divinely. You know, hey, the phone rang. These two got to come here. This got to come here. And if you read my book, it's pretty amazing how this went down. The day before, I had met two people for the first time, Rudy Giuliani and Ron Agraff, which is his longtime assistant, at this one place I went to. And they're the only two I talked to. So that Ron Agraff, she seen me, and these other guys all got kind of tied up. She says, come on, Mike, you don't have to wait for them. She brought me around the corner in his office and says, there he is. And she walked away. And I walked to him just like in my dream. And he looked at me and he goes, Mike, he said, are you a Christian? I see you always wear your cross. And I said, yes, Mr. Trump. And this is a divine appointment. And it was like talking to a friend. It was amazing. I wasn't nervous. I was back then. I was very nervous if I met people, even that wore a tie. They made me nervous, right? It was like two brothers talking that had long lost friends or something. And one of the first things I said to him, I go, you know, I was a crack addict. And I looked at him like this, like to see his reaction. And he goes, and I said, I'm going to set up this recovery network, the Lindell Recovery Network, that's going to help millions of people get off drugs like I was on drugs and get them to the Lord. And he says, and I'm going to shut that border down and stop the drugs pouring in. And I talked to him for about, almost an hour. And I walked out of that office. I go, you know, And he never asked for money or nothing. He asked me, what's it like making my pillows and stuff here in the U.S.? He asked me for my opinion on stuff. It was amazing. I walked out of there and I asked his employees. I spent almost a day there talking to different employees. Hey, would I just see, is that true? He goes, Mike, he's a great boss, great, great person. And they all had a story how he had helped them individually. He didn't have to do that. So I went back to Minnesota. And I was the media's darling, everybody. I could cross the street, an American dream on steroids. The media, all ABC, NBC, CNN. Hey, how many more people are you hiring today? You know, veterans or ex-addicts. Mike, you're American dream, American hero and all this stuff. Well, I went back and I did a press release that I met Donald Trump. That's all I said. I had a meeting with him. You know, here's a normal just a citizen that got to have this meeting with this presidential candidate. And the media turned on me. The Minneapolis Star and Tribune, these were my friends. They said, they put out a story, Mike Lindell, the biggest drug dealer in the cities. And I'm going, my drug dealer's defending me, going, he never dealt a drug in his life. He tried to rid Minneapolis of drugs by doing them all. And, but it was this big attack. The Better Business Bureau took MyPillow from an A plus to an F. We were up for their biggest award. Their biggest, highest award, their torch award. The attack started then, and they never let up. But I never looked back. I know what God had me intend to do, that MyPillow was just a platform for something much bigger. And every time I got attacked, I'm going, I must be doing something right, because this don't make sense. You know, and the media always had a problem with me because they knew me before. You know, MyPillow giving away millions of dollars to help hurricane victims. I'm doing speeches around the country in churches about Jesus and getting saved. And then here they all attack. Why? You know.
That's an amazing story, Mike.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. And I do understand it, too. What's important to you now?
What's that?
What's important to you now?
The important to now, my most important thing is for the country is getting the paper ballots hand counted. I've been fighting an attack for over 4 years. I told our president, I've been fighting for this since the 2020 election, and I'm never stopping. And I love our country. I don't want to lose our country, but there was an interesting conversation that we had with the president and I become very good friends, and we're sitting one day in his office last summer, and he said, Mike, he said, they're just destroying our country. They're destroying everything. And I said, sir, I said, God uses all things for good. And right now, the more they attack and people are getting their eyes opened up, they're coming into two buckets. The first bucket is the bucket of common sense. That's your bucket, sir. They're pouring in from both sides. You've given them no reason to leave that bucket. You have proof of concept how you helped the whole country when we got to December of 2019, how the greatest consumer confidence ever with the economy and everything.
Yeah.
And I said, but there's another bucket going on, and that's the bucket, the biggest revival for Jesus Christ. I said, people are pouring in. People don't look to God when things are going good. They look for God when things are going bad. So I tell him this, and he looks at me, he says, but Mike, he said, this country is going to be so bad, I don't know if we can fix it in 4 years. And I looked at him and I said, sir, with God, all things are possible. And God working through you, you'll get it done faster and better than anyone in history.
Yeah.
Well, look at people. He's done more in a couple months. So I'm very, for me, we're in the greatest time to be alive. And people always say to me, Mike, when you spoke at the Rose Garden that time, you said, God gave us grace. And I said, oh, but he has, everybody. I said, God's given us grace. It's the best time to be alive because this is changing the course we were on, the course of history. So I'm very excited about the future and what's going to be and what all this is going to. God uses all things for good for those who believe. And we're going to get to a great place.
Absolutely. So you were born and raised in Minnesota. Are you surprised, and were you surprised when so many Somalian people moved in and they started to take over Minnesota?
Yeah. It's horrible. My friends, I lived on the streets of Minneapolis. My friends down there, They had all quit. Most of them had quit crack. Even my dealer friends, a lot of them, and they had started their businesses, and they had businesses all up and down Minneapolis there. And when the Somalians came in, this is like the Trojan horse for our country, right? And
yeah.
When they came in, there was supposed to be 25,000, and then they opened up the floodgates, and they came in, and they pushed my friends out of the areas that we spent. I spent so much time in Minneapolis, and they pushed them out. And when you see all those fires and the destruction of Minneapolis, those were my people that I know down there. They had come up from Chicago, and then the Somalians, they want Sharia law. They want these changes that they have. They want. I'll give you a story about that real quick. My factory is about 25 minutes from Minneapolis in a town called Shakopee. And next to us is Amazon. Jeff Bezos has Amazon there. And believe me, if you've heard me ever, I don't care much for Jeff Bezos. Okay. So I'm very boisterous about anything I believe in or that I know
right.
as fact.
Yeah.
So Jeff was taking him out of Minneapolis and busting him back and forth. Well, they turned on him and they all were picketing next door and they were saying, oh, there's no air conditioning. Well, these buildings in Minnesota, we don't have air conditioning in 1 million square foot buildings. We don't need it. He makes us stand all day. Whether you're line workers, you know, that they put this kid up there, this 18-year-old or whatever, this white kid, 18 years old. And I'm going, wait a minute. What is this all about, really? And here comes Ilhan Omar. Here comes Congressman Omar comes trotting out from her Minneapolis to the where they were all picketing. And then the truth comes out. They were complaining and on strike because they wanted Sharia law. They wanted where they get their prayer time and shut down his line and shut down the workers and, and all these times. And that's what their real thing was about. Now, NBC News came over to me at my pillow and she sticks her microphone in my face. Usually that's a little 28-year-old snob from NBC, and she goes, Mr. Lindell, we know you don't care too much for Jeff Bezos, but what do you think of what's going on with Congressman Omar next door with the picketing? And I went just like this. I said, let it be known for the first time and maybe the only time ever, me and old Jeff are going to lock arms against that woman. And then I want to tell you one more story. You bring up the Muslims and the Somalians. When Donald Trump won in 2016, I went to the CBS Morning Show. It was out of Minneapolis, and I get invited there. Now I didn't know difference between Muslims and Christians. I just knew, I got saved on February 18th, 2017. I always believed in God. I always wore my cross, even in the crap houses. But I was saved on that day, born again. Well, I get back from when I was with Donald Trump at the victory party in New York City. Remember, this is November of 2016. All the media called me up. Mike, will you come back to Minnesota and tell us why you knew Donald Trump was going to win? And I said, well, sure. And so I fly back to Minnesota and I go on CBS Sunday morning, and this gal asked me all these questions. She's a far lefty and reporter, but she was fair. She'd always ask me a question. I'd give her an answer, and she would ask me the next question. And I'm just naive. I just tell it like it is. I'm as transparent as you can get. So the last question was, Mike, if you're a Somali and a Muslim here in Minneapolis, you're very worried that Donald Trump got in office, what would you say to them? Well, I went, you just tell them that Jesus picked Donald Trump and God's got, and he's picked for such a time as this, and they all need Jesus. And her mouth dropped like, how dare you say that?
Amazing.
So the headlines were, Mike Lindell, the pillow guy, says that Somalians or the Muslims need Jesus. It was, and the attacks just, it's a shame because yeah. they want, we can't go over there and change their culture or their, all their stuff. And it's really tough, everybody, when you have, even their work ethics and stuff that they do, it's all different. And
yeah.
It's just so different. It's a different culture, not to mention that they're trying to, we're a Christian nation. And, you know, it's supposed to be, you know, our language of English. I mean, yeah. I mean, there's so many things that common sense that shouldn't be. And there was the only reason they got put in, started to put into Minneapolis. It was actually, I believe, a Republican that wanted to get Democrat votes and through the churches invited them in. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So things, once again, politicians doing things that don't make sense to try and get votes.
Because of, but what I don't understand, Mike, Billy, turn that fan off for me. What I don't understand, there are more white people in Minnesota than there are Somalian.
Oh,
why don't the white people vote out Ileana Omar and do something about that situation? Because they can vote her out, can't they?
Yeah, we can vote her out, but you got to understand, this is where paper ballots, Pan County comes in that I've been fighting for. It's so corrupt in Minnesota. And, you know, I know I've talked about it, and I'm still considering running for governor there.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, there's very few people that I grew up in Minnesota my whole life, and I know how corrupt. You have a few counties. You're talking Hennepin County that's voting Ileana Omar in. That's where all the Somalians are and all the this craziness. They got a mayor in Minneapolis. They're the ones that let the fires go on and stuff. They're as far left as you can get on the spectrum of a Democrat, right? And then you got our Governor Walz is the most bizarre governor ever to walk the planet. And so you got, that's why she doesn't get voted out. And the cheating is rampant. The cheating is beyond anything you've seen. Believe me, I know it goes on in all 50 states. I've studied it and breathed it 18 hours a day for over 4 years. Minnesota is one of the worst. Everyone's worse in a different way, but you hit the nail on the head. It's also a Trojan horse for, there's more Somalians there than any place outside of Somalia in the world, you know, you hear this and they going, well, Mike, you're a Christian. You could care about everybody. I do, but don't come here and try and change what we've done.
That's right.
You know, what we've done. I don't, you can do, you know, be your own person, but I've seen what went on in Minneapolis. I've seen what they've done. My friends that are down there, there's fear. There's a lot of gangs that they're, you know, that I mean, I could sit here and talk for hours about this. It's, you know, they're living down there with them, but you say it's not as easy to vote people out when you have corrupt elections. That's why I've been fighting for fair elections for 4 years, and I've given tens of millions of dollars to it, and I will keep borrowing if I have to. So we get 132 countries have banned computers in their voting. 132, the last one being Argentina, who freed their country after years. And here we have, and over 100 countries have banned early voting and mail-in voting. In the United States, we have the worst voting systems and platforms in the world. Nobody's even close. We have the worst of everything.
That's amazing.
And then you got the worst of the worst, which is Minnesota.
And so when you run for governor?
Right now I'm considering it. I told it about a month ago. I was going to run back in 2020. In 2022, after I found out all this stuff about the voting platforms, I figured, you know what? It's not the right time.
Oh, okay.
We've got to secure our elections first. So now in this next election in 26, I'm very much considering it because we have enough of the machines gone and we're going to get there before 2026. I believe we will have some of the best elections in the planet.
Nice.
We got our president working on it. We've got Tulsi Gabbard. They just came out and said how dangerous these machines are. And I have over 300,000 people on the ground in all 50 states working on getting rid of these and going to paper ballots. So in Minnesota, I believe it'll be enough where I would run, but they're doing, I'm considering it, and we have people checking out polling and stuff like that. And by the way, just so people understand, when we talk about politics, when politicians make decisions that don't help any of the people, I don't care if you're a Democrat, a Republican, right, a liberal, a conservative, when it doesn't help any of us as people, there's a hidden agenda, and it's very evil. And what people see, the more craziness they do, like Tim Walz in Minnesota, people see that, and they come in from both sides into this bucket of common sense.
Yes.
And so I really believe, you know, when I go into, I went to the Democrat convention, I shaved my mustache and I went in incognito until they figured out who I was. But I could be in the heart of Chicago, which I was, right in the middle of protesters. I don't, and they all knew who I was. They come up to me and they're going, Mike, they're all about secure elections and stuff that I believe in. There's not to divide their, oh, I hate Mike Lindell because he thinks Donald Trump's the best president ever. I'm fighting for our elections, too. Yeah. I'm fighting for common sense. I'm the same person that gave millions of dollars to the inner city. I'm the same person that lived there. I'm the same person that lived in the street. I didn't change. I know I'm the giver. I mean, what changed was the attacks by the media, the evil that's out there.
Let me ask this, Mike. This is my belief. I was stunned that Ilhan Omar was brought here as a refugee. They brought her to America as a refugee, and she was able to come in and run for Congress or whatever she is and be a part of our government. And then she turned on America. I can't
understand. Yeah,
and as a result, I realized that foreigners should not be allowed to come here and run in our government because they have the mentality of their country and not the mentality
That's
of America.
Right.
And so if they run for government, they're going to bring in those ideas into America. What do you think about my idea that foreigners should not run for government in our country?
100% they shouldn't be allowed to run. I mean, that's just common sense. It's like illegals. If you've done something illegal, you're here illegally.
Right.
They don't care if you're a refugee. If you're from another country and you come here as a refugee, yeah, you should be allowed to run. I mean, you've got to protect your election platform. You've got to protect your elections. They're sacred. And especially if you get elected because a computer can elect you, that's a takeover of a country. Now, maybe when she ran, there was enough legitimate votes that actually voted her in because they had, like I say, it's very concentrated, but I doubt it.
Yeah.
I really doubt it. I think it was done, but evil did that. I think it was stolen. I'll say that on your show. It doesn't matter to me. I'm telling you this. Then how about Keith Ellison of Minnesota, the attorney general, everybody? Keith Ellison, I can tell you 100% his race was stolen. And what is Keith Ellison doing right now? He's attacking Mike Lindell. About a month ago, they served me papers, not against me, against my foundation and my recovery network that gets people off addiction. I mean, and you know what they give us all this stuff. My lawyers go, he's got to have this by Friday. Or what? He's going to come and arrest me? They go, we don't know what he's capable of. So we give him all this stuff. Guess what they come back with? They come back with, they couldn't believe, they think I'm lying because I put in, back in the year they were talking about, I put in 100% of the money. In my own charities, I didn't ask anybody for a dime.
Yeah.
Nobody would set up a charity and put in 100%. I did, people. I did.
My
so
God,
then he does that.
I got to ask you this because of time, all right? How did you and why did you become a crack addict or a drug addict?
Yeah.
Why did you do that? How did that happen and why?
Here's what I think, because I spent a lot of time in the inner city, too, with so many of my black friends that are fatherless, and we all got along. My family, my parents divorced when I was 7 years old. Divorces were not common back in 1968.
Right.
I got put into a new school, and I was the only kid that was coming from a broken family. So it was so awkward. I became very quiet. I didn't fit in. I felt like, you know, we'd have this. And then my mom, when she did remarry, then I had, what, you got two dads? People, the kids didn't understand. I felt inside like I didn't fit in. And fatherlessness in this country, they did a poll in a prison in Kansas and said, how many people are there? These are felons, everybody. They're in prison. Both their parents waited to got married, then had the child, and were still married while they were in prison. 0%. That's how important the family unit is, I believe. Now I became a show off, and either I went talk or a show off. On my And then, you know, I manifested into cocaine. There's a lot of stories, but
did you start out with pot, or did you start out with cocaine?
I started out with, you know, I became an addict, and like with the addiction, with owing the mafia money for football betting, but also drinking and then cocaine. As soon as I was introduced to cocaine, I could get to where I wanted to be just like that. And people, this is what I tell everybody, with addiction, it does three things. It's false courage. Everybody knows that, you know, you can get false courage, whatever, right. But it masks pain. The biggest thing it does, yeah. It masks pain, that deep inner pain. Okay. Yes. When I'm, you know, I could mask that pain and be out there. It would solve both my problems. When I ended up here, and then I became a very functional addict. In my book, I say addiction affects everyone, no matter how many forks you eat with. What I meant by that, I lived in the streets with no fork, all the way up to being proper people with four forks. You know how many people come up to me all the time and say, Mike, I had addiction issues too. And they might be the big CEO of a billion-dollar company or a big politician. They're afraid to say it, but they're functioning addicts everywhere, and it affects everything. Well, for me, I was a functioning addict for about 20 years, and then I got into crack cocaine. And even my dealers, you guys got to hear this, the dealers did an intervention on me. In 2008, I was living downtown Minneapolis. I had a warrant for my arrest, and I come out of the room and all three dealers are standing there. They had never met each other, but they knew of each other. And I go, what is this? They go, Mike, you've been up for 14 days. We're cutting you off. And I go, I've only been up for 10 or whatever. I'm arguing. He goes, the one drug dealer shook his head. What's wrong with you? And he leaves because they were all against. They wanted me to quit. But anyway, I go, what is this, an intervention? He goes, call it whatever you want. So my friend from the project of Chicago, he went, his name is Joe, went downtown the streets of Minneapolis. He told everyone, I didn't know at the time, you don't sell to this guy. You see some white guy with a mustache, you don't sell to him, or we're coming after you. So now I'm upstairs. And the last dealer, Ty, he sits down and he goes, how much crack you got left? And I look and he tries to wait me out. You guys, I look over and he fell asleep. It's 2:30 in the morning and I'm carpet farming. I'm out of crack, scraping my pipe. I see his sleep. I hit down the streets of Minneapolis for an hour. I couldn't get crack anywhere. I came back upstairs and he's waiting up for me. He said, how'd that work out for you? And I'm all upset. And he goes, man, you've been telling us for years that you're going to quit someday and you're going to come back and help us all out of this addiction world we're living in. And he goes, we're not going to let you die on us. He goes, give me your phone. I'm going to take a picture so you can put it on that book you've been bragging you're going to write someday. That picture is on the cover of my book, everybody. And two of those dealers are born again Christians that work for me right now. That's and amazing. Changed lives.
You know, and so how were you able to overcome overnight? You quit drugs overnight. Long story short, yeah. And because of time, how were you able to quit overnight?
Yeah, that was a year later on January 16, 2009. It was a prayer to God. Even though I didn't have this personal relationship with him, I would always pray. And I said, and I knew that I had a big calling. Everybody, we all have big callings. But I knew if I went one more day that someone else would be called. Someone else would be picked for whatever was my, the rest of my life would be. And so I prayed that night. And my prayer was, God, I said, if you have this calling for me this day, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and never have the desire again for any of these addictions. And I said, and then I'm all yours. Well, I woke up in the morning and my prayer was answered. I go, something's different. I've never had the desire was gone. Now, I did go, you know, a couple of months later, I went to a church where I wanted to find out why I was an addict in the first place. And that's where I told you a lot of it came from, you know, the broken home that I had and the fatherlessness. And so that's where it was. It was the grace. God gave me that. I thought I was saved at that time because it was so different. I'm going, wow, I don't even feel like doing any drugs or doing, you know, it was just gone. And it was very exciting.
So let me ask, when you were a drug addict, did you live on the streets or were you living in your own, were you living in your own house or apartment or were you like a street drug addict?
No, for 20 years, I was married, had raised a family. That was the cocaine, and I owned a bar for 13 years. Not a good place for an addict. I was a very functioning addict, like I say.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I owned a bar. So then when I, the, when the, it was devastating when I had to sell the bar. And at that time, I switched to crack cocaine, which had a lot to do with it. I sold the bar in 2003 and I invented my pillow in 2004. Now people say, I didn't quit crack till 2009. Crack addicts and stuff go, that's impossible. This is what God did to me. It was like a separation of two people. Over here being my addiction and over here being, I wouldn't go to those shows. Hi, there's no way I could be tweaking out windows with doing pillow shows and stuff. So if you read my book, it's like this miracle of this even coming to fruition while I'm being an addict at the same time. Then it all collapsed in like 2007. In 2008, I was in the streets for probably off and on different month, but it wasn't in the physical streets. I'd be living in, you know, my drug dealer's place for, you know, I'd stay there for a couple of weeks or whatever. Or, you know, I've been in probably four of the worst hoods in the United States, Milwaukee, Kansas City, Memphis, and Las Vegas. I've lived there for, you know, I mean, even my drug dealer back home would say, get out of there. You're in such danger. But I had just no fear. And I look back now and say, wow, you know, God protected me during that time.
So let me ask, so you were not raised with your father. So did you?
Stepfather.
I'm sorry?
Stepfather, I came on 2 years later. So I got.
So did you? Did you finally reconcile with your real father, your earthly father? You ever reconcile?
Oh yeah, yeah. He just wasn't there. But yeah, we would reconcile, and he passed away a few years ago, 3-4 years ago, I guess. And actually, he passed away the day after my wedding, 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
But he, you know, I never got. There was so many father issues there. But I would say over the last 10 years of his life, he should have died. And I think that God kept him alive so we could become closer.
Nice.
And
did you forgive your mother for bringing other men into your life?
Yeah, yeah. When I got saved on February 18, 2017, all of those forgivenesses were gone. I mean, it was so easy for me. Like, I got to forgive me. And I even forgave myself for terrible things I did in the 1980s that I would never do against my moral compass and things that I could never forgive myself for.
Yeah.
I forgave myself for all of that. And one of the things that I see a miracle, everybody, I got to tell you this, is with my record, I never thought I could come within a mile of a White House, right? Well, I was a big Elvis Presley fan, huge. It was my first concert as a little kid. And there was a famous picture of Elvis Presley and Richard Nixon. And I'm going, wow. And I didn't think, wow, you got to be a president to meet Elvis Presley. It was the other way around. I go, wow, I'll never be an Elvis Presley to be able to meet a president. It was in my head like, wow, how fortunate was Elvis to be able to meet a president. Now, you guys, when I finally was invited to the White House, in 2017, after I was saved, I walked in that door and the first picture inside the White House is Elvis Presley and Richard Nixon. And I just got goosebumps. And I went and sat down and there was 10 of us invited there for this manufacturer summit. Now the President Trump comes in, sits next to me, and we go live to the nation and you only see us two. All my friends at home are going, some of them still on crack going, what is this crack addict sitting next to the president?
And like,
Jesus
what the?
Is real, because this would be impossible.
Amazing. So let me ask, excuse me, do you have perfect peace now?
Do I what?
Do you have perfect peace?
I have to pray every day and stay in the word, but I do have a peace that even though I've been attacked and you know, my fortune's gone, I've done what God's asked me to do, and I'm going to keep going, and I do have a peace about that. Do I still worry? I still worry about my employees and my pillow, and I worry about them. I tend to worry more about others than myself because I feel protected by God, but I got to give it to him and have that peace. And And a guy that could never speak in front of people, God sure gave me a peace about doing that.
You know? And so do you have perfect peace?
Well, I don't know if anybody ever has perfect peace. I have a peace that knowing I'm going to heaven, that I'm going, you know, that for eternity. I don't have, you know, I want to get as many people to join me as possible, my loved ones. And do I get frustrated sometimes with, you know, I want to shake people, some of my own relatives, and go, come on, what's wrong? Look at me. I got through it, God, by the grace of God. And
why don't you drop your anger so you can have perfect peace? Why not just drop the anger?
Well, I guess, you know, I think my anger, any anger issues, I mean, I've had, it takes a lot, but I think a lot of that left me when I was saved. You know, when you talk about anger, I was never an angry, and people that know me, I didn't have this anger, but I was surprised there was, I guess I had blinders on there, but I think I was very much freed of an anger demon that would be there. I think that's long gone. But I believe anybody can get angry. Jesus got angry when he flipped over the tables, remember?
But since anger is not of God, and anger separate you from God and keep you away from God, why don't you just drop it so you can be one with God right now?
Well, I think I have done that. And when you say anger, I didn't know where are you seeing anger?
I'm sorry?
Where are you seeing the anger?
No, you know, I'm asking, do you have it? And you said, yeah, you have some, I guess.
I don't think I got rid of that. I didn't think I ever had it. But then I had it when, you know, I got married. My wife's called me out. She said, you know, you have some deep-rooted anger. But when I got saved on February 18th, 2017, I think I let that go. There was a lot of forgiveness for, you know, things that I have done and then also for my father, for my mother, all that. I believe, you know, it was a complete release. I have enemies. The reason I can get along with even the ones that attack me every day, I forgive them and I can deal with them. I don't get angry towards them. I guess 2 years ago, everybody, y'all see me get angry at a lawyer in a deposition. And I believe I said the word, I called him an A something. And it made national news because how could this Christian guy get angry? He attacked my employees. And that wasn't an inner anger. That was an anger. How dare you bring my employees into it? I think there's a righteous anger, and then there's one that you can be set free of that's deep-rooted and to get that perfect peace you're talking about. But I think anyone could be upset that someone's unjustly attacking someone that I care for, which are my employees.
Which is easy for you to accept or believe, that you are a sinner or all your sins have been forgiven?
For me, the sinner part was easy. I knew I was a sinner. I mean, we're all sinners in the end.
But how about today, in your life, which is easier, to believe you're a sinner or all your sins have been forgiven?
I think it's all your sinners have been forgiven because, but I don't use that as an excuse to sin. You know? There's people that do that going, hey, my sins are going to be forgiven. I'm going to run out and sin. I don't consciously sin, but it's nice to know that they're already forgiven. And I think that for me, it was harder for me because I use mathematics to show that God exists. And that's my book. Hence my book, What Are the Odds? In my book, I say, in fact, I would have stuff all my life happen that a one in a million, a one in a billion, or this is impossible. When do you add them all get together and you consider it a miracle? So for me, I have 14 near-death experiences. I've been everywhere from no forks to four forks. God was always chasing me, and I was always saying my incorrigible self, show me more, show me more, show me more. He would show me miracle after miracle after miracle. I'd each say, show me more. It wasn't until you show a crack addict that all of a sudden is friends with a president. I'm going, this is impossible without God. Yeah. And then it leads up to February 18, 2017. And God has showed me enough. I'm going, I'm all yours.
Let me ask this because of time. I read in your bio that you've been married 3 times, right?
Yep.
And why so many times?
The first time was 20 years, and that's when we were both full-blown addicts. That was my, I raised 4 kids, and when that divorce, there's a lot, you'd have to read my book, but we were basically making the pillows, labeling them in our living room. It was literally lights out, and it was over, and it was over both with us and both with everything. It was like you could come back from that would have been very hard. And I told her when we got divorced, it was very amicable. I said, you know what? I will give you this money every month. And if every time comes to my pillow, I'll try and save that. But I know, you know, we've got to move on, separate. And I quit everything. And she's, you know, was still using. But that's in the book. The second one was for 20 days. And it was very much we were unevenly yoked. I guess we personally, I wasn't saved yet. So, but it wasn't meant to be. It was, I think a lot of that, she was still full blown addict. And I was, I had been 5 years out of addiction or 4 years. And I guess I was reaching for something that wasn't of God. So the 20 year marriage, the 20 day marriage, then you had the marriage I'm in right now, which was 2 years ago, but we dated for, I think, 9 years.
Nice.
I mean, dated like in the Bible, if you right. know what I mean.
Yes.
I mean, it was very much, it was like a reboot.
And does your wife, so you have children only with the first wife, or do you have children with it?
That's correct.
With the first wife.
Just
wife that you have now, does she obey you?
No. We're both alike in so many ways because we're both, you know, I don't like someone where, I mean, I went like a marriage where, and we work on it every day. We read our Bibles every morning. We read our marriage books every morning. Do we have arguments and fights? Absolutely. But she'll push back. A lot of our arguments are fights because she's got very good, where God will show her, hey, we shouldn't be around this person or do stuff with this person or business. But with her, our biggest argument will be, I'm intertwined there. I can't just cut it like this because you have to use common sense to when you're, you know, in business with different people and you find something out, you've got to be very tactical sometimes about it and not just, that's it. She'll want it done right now. And I'm going, what would you do? And what, you get rid of them?
That's right. Is it difficult being married to a woman that will not disobey you? I mean, will not obey you because God said to the wife to obey your husband. So is it difficult being married to a woman that will not obey you?
No. When I say obey, we will talk about things. I don't know if when we say obey, what I mean by that is she'll push back on things that maybe I was going down the wrong path. She's the one that really led me to the Lord, going, hey, you don't have a personal relationship. And I go, I believe in God. Don't tell me that. So I think it's a difference between when God said obey in the Bible. She's not like, hey, you don't do this. You're going to do this. Absolutely not. It's like, you know, have your man's back. She does that more than anything. I've never seen a person where there's not one part of her that would not have my back.
And how do you, for guys who want to get married or thinking about it or getting married, how do you deal with the hell in her when it comes out? You know how women get angry about nothing, they're bitching about nothing, and they're never satisfied. How do you deal with the hell when it comes out of her?
And let's not forget the timing. The walls could be crumbling, and the woman will bring up, you know, we have to, you know, 2 weeks from now, we have to fix that tree out in the west corner there.
Yeah.
And when is that going to get done? I'm going, does it matter right now?
Right.
I mean, this is something, everybody and guys out there, it's just common. We don't understand it, but you can't that you can react to it and blow up, you know, or whatever, but that ain't getting nowhere. And I, you know, different couples, there's a way you have to deal with that. And it's not even, I don't even believe it's a reach out for attention. I mean, it's just, it's like, you know, what's important to them at the time. Here's what I think. I think a lot of women, they count on the man, no matter what's happening around them. Oh, they're the anchor. They're the rock. They're going to get through it. But then their thing is because it's so important to them, but it can look so trivial to the guy going, are you kidding me? And that can become a problem if you let it.
Yeah.
Don't let it, because their thing to them that they're just trusting you that you're going to be able to get through everything you're dealing with.
Yeah.
But they want you to acknowledge their little bitty problem that they think is so big.
Yeah.
Because why? It's big to them because they count on you to solve the big problem.
So do you
take it as a compliment? Take it as a compliment.
Do you believe in the order of God and Christ? Christ and man over woman, and woman over children?
Oh, I don't know. I think in a marriage you got to have, you know, God is number one, and then the marriage is number two.
So you believe that order, though? You follow and love that order of God in Christ, Christ over man over woman.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess so. I mean, I didn't even know that was a thing in the Bible. I just thought, yeah, it was, here's God and here's the couple, and you put God first, and then you get your marriage. So did the woman change those words?
Yes, she tried to put the woman over the man, but God said, man over woman, as God is over man. But let me ask,
right,
women, do you agree with me that women were created to lead and not to follow and not lead? Women are supposed to follow. It's not in their nature to be leaders, but followers. Do you agree with that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think you know, you go back in time, it's been like that. And I think, but I think there's, you know, I mean, you're putting me on a spot there. Do I believe that if I talk to women out there, they say no? Is that the way God intended? You know, we'd have to find out from God. I mean, I do believe in that God set it up for the man to be the protector, the provider, whatever. I do believe that part. And I believe in a traditional marriage. I don't believe in all this other stuff.
Right.
I think it's been proven over and over again. A man is a man. A woman is a woman. And if they stay together and have kids, the family unit gets you closer to God, and things are more beautiful.
So,
and that's what we've gotten away from.
Yeah. So you do agree that women were created to follow and not to lead. God said to the man, every time you listen to the woman, you're going to suffer. You notice that every time you listen to a woman, you suffer?
Well, I don't know about that. No, and I don't know. You know, you're throwing things out of the Bible. I don't even know how. I'm 100%. I'd have to see that. You know,
remember God, when Adam listened to the woman, God said to him,
right, yeah, yeah,
because
right,
you listen to the woman, you're going to suffer. And so now right, every right, time the man listens to the woman, he suffers. You agree with that, right?
No, then sometimes I listen to the woman and got me from avoiding something really bad. So I think that there's a...
would you ever follow a woman?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I
you
think
would?
I mean, I think there's leaders out there that have done great things as women, you know, where I would follow. And I think they have traits. One of the traits I've seen women with more that are more multitaskers than guys.
Well, they're crazy.
I'm gifted as a multitasker.
There's no such thing as multitasking. You can only do one thing at a time.
I think that this is the way God intended, but there's also, you know, I'm seeing, you know, would I follow a woman as a leader? Absolutely. But
you
it would have to be.
Mike, you would follow a woman?
As if she was the right leader, if she's done the right things.
But that doesn't exist, though. No such thing as a great leader female.
Well, let's see if we can find some here.
You know, Donald Trump, I call Donald Trump the great white hope, right?
He
is from God. But the one thing I disagree with him is that he's putting women in leadership role, and it doesn't look right. It makes the men look weak, and it takes away from the man and the authority of the man given to him by God. And then I noticed that the president has this woman called Paula White. I don't know if you're familiar with her.
I know her, yeah.
I could not believe that Donald Trump put a female over him as his appointed pastor, knowing that this woman is insane. She has no sense at all.
Yeah, I don't know all about that, but I will say the other thing you said first about Donald Trump, I know most of the people around him. What he does, the one thing he does is he will take the person he believes is best for the job, and it doesn't matter, woman or man, black or white or whatever. And he doesn't do it because, you got to hire this many women or this many, you know what I mean? He does it because he believes that they're the right person for a job. And he just doesn't care what color or who they are, man or woman. And it just so happens, you are correct. Right now, especially his direct assistants, most of them are women.
That's awful, Mike.
They're not the leader. These aren't the leader ones. So these aren't the leader ones. These are the ones that are serving him, his assistants. You're talking about, you look at the ones in his secretaries, most of them are men. When you talk about all them secretaries, I mean, you got so. And then as far as Paula White, she was around in his first term, correct?
She was loco then.
What's that?
She was loco then. Insane.
Yeah, I don't know what all the stuff she did or did too, but you got to realize that I didn't come get real close to the president until 21. You know, I knew him all there back then, but I didn't converse with him all the time. I didn't even have his phone number. So I'm kind of outside looking in. I seen Paula White speak once at a church, and back in Minnesota, the church where, where I'm from. And it was quite a sermon, I will say that. It was like pretty out there. I think wasn't she an ex-addict? I don't know when you say, I don't even know. I thought she was an ex-addict.
I don't know. I didn't know. I would never have her as a pastor. Would you ever sit under a woman pastor, preacher, or whatever?
Oh, I've never seen that. I mean, for mine, it's always been men. And I think Donald Trump, too, he spends a lot of time listening to Franklin Graham. I don't know where he goes to church, whatever, but for me, I've never been to a church that had a female pastor.
God bless you, man. You're right on. But let me ask. One other thing, then I got to move on. The clock is going fast. I tell men that they should not marry educated women because educated women do not make for good wives and good mothers. Am I wrong?
I have no idea on that. I mean, I guess if I wouldn't even think of that. I think you're really drawing a prejudice there because I'm sure that there's bad women that are stupid and some that are high IQs. And I think you couldn't base a mother based on one or the other. I've seen bad mothers that are both really dumb or really smart. And I've seen good mothers that have been really dumb and really smart too. So I don't believe that statement at all.
Mike, let me ask, what do you think about the attack upon white men, white people, period, but white men? White men, they're blaming white people for everything. And especially white men, what do you think about the attack upon white men today? And what should white people do about the attack? Because it's not justified. They're blaming them for the failures and everything. What do you think about the attack on white men?
I think we're going to get through all that. I believe that Donald Trump is one of the greatest uniters in history. And when I talk about people, And I know this because I spend a lot of my time in the Black community.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about, I see that all the time, the reverse prejudice against the white guy.
Yeah.
And, when you're talking to a guy, I remember going on a radio show in Chicago, this is back, I don't know, maybe 5-6 years ago before all the political stuff. And it was an all Black radio station and went all over the projects. And I was telling her my story. And I said, you know, in the Black community, I said, everyone's doing drugs and I'm dealing drugs and all this stuff. And she goes, you're prejudiced or whatever. And I said, I lived it. Other than my one drug dealer's Christian mom praying for us in the corner. All of us, with the fatherness that were gone, I might have been the only white guy there. But I said, this is reality. The grandmother become taking care of the kids.
Yeah.
The mother gets abandoned by the father. And I'm telling this to this lady. Her got in a big fight on air. And everyone in Chicago, all over the planet, they called in. Hey, that white guy, he's right. You'll get him back and apologize.
Nice.
And she brings me back. But she stuck it in my face just because I was white. I was telling the truth of my experience. And she didn't know I lived in Minneapolis and spent my time down there. You know, I said, I'm telling you because I see the prejudice coming out of there. And they don't even realize that their own problem is right there. And yeah. I said, you could take white guys and put the white community in that same situation of fatherlessness because I was there. And things turn out the same there, too. It don't matter the color of the skin. You take the father out of the family, and you're going to have problems.
I was going to ask you what's wrong with the Blacks, but you've already answered that. What's wrong with the Blacks?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with them. It's the broken families. That's what's wrong.
Amazing.
When they did this back in the late 60s and broke up the Black family, this is the same time my family got divorced, you know? And we had conversations on it. They all love me because I'd sit down there in Minneapolis. I'd be preaching about all this stuff. Then, hey, you guys, you know, you can get out of this. You don't have to sit there. You guys, you're all, none of their fathers were around. And then I watched the grandmothers taking care of the kids. And the mother, it was just a drug, but it wasn't the drugs. It's not like it's because that was the manifestation of a broken home.
Yes.
And that's it.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been telling people for a long time that racism does not exist either. And I grew up on a plantation down in Alabama under Jim Crow laws and all that, right? But racism is a made-up word. Our battle is a spiritual battle, a warfare between good and evil, and it has nothing to do with color. It has nothing to do with male or female. It has nothing to do with color. It's good versus evil. Am I wrong? Yeah.
You're 100% right. I've been saying this for how long? You know, you're preaching to exactly what I've been saying.
Yeah.
Because I'm a perfect example of you. It don't matter your color. If you're put into this environment and you strip the family unit, it's a bad deal.
Yes.
Remember I said earlier in the show that they did that poll in Kansas in that prison. How many, the traditional marriage where you finally, you get married, have your children, and then the person's in prison for a felony, and they're still married to that day. It don't exist because that tells you how powerful the family unit is.
Yeah.
Families that stay together, those kids grow up, right? That's changed somewhat because of our school systems can also impact them now because they try and be the parents. That's why the president wants to get rid of the teachers unions and all that.
Nice.
But I'm telling you by the way, everybody, if you go down to the county level, which is jail, your gross misdemeanors, there you have, you know, it's somewhat family unit together. But once you get a solid family unit, there's very few that even commit the crimes at all.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Amazing.
And you're going, how can that be? How can that be?
Mike,
look up the facts.
I got to put you on the hot seat. I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible. All right?
The hot seat.
What is love?
What is love? Giving to the person everything you have unconditionally. I guess it's a feeling. You're putting out love to feel loved. It's one of the most important feelings there are to man.
How many hours of sleep do you get a night?
Seven.
Seven? Nice. Should we give the Blatt reparations?
No.
I'm sorry?
What do you mean? No, you mean reparation? What do you mean?
Should we give the Blatt? You know how they always begging for reparation?
Oh, no, I just said no.
Oh, okay.
They don't even want that.
Nice.
Yeah, no, they don't even want that. I talked to them all the time. No, they don't want to be him, so.
Is the earth flat or round?
It's round.
What is a man?
A man has the genitals that God gave him and all the inner workings, the miracle of God, physical attributes that we label as a man.
Are UFOs real?
Yes. True. And when I say by that, I would say yes.
True or false? When she's crying, she's lying.
False.
How have you ever gone 90 going north?
No, what's that?
Have you ever done 90 going north? Have you ever heard of that? 90
no.
Going north.
No, what is it?
I'll tell you later. It's a Blatt thing. Was segregation a good thing?
Segregation?
Right.
No.
Have you ever tested something? Have you ever tasted something so good it made you want to slap your mama?
No, I just don't.
Does a chicken have lips?
No.
What should a man do first? Get married or buy a house?
I think it depends on the situation. I don't say either one, because if true love came before the house, you take the true love. If the house came before true love, you take the house. And there's no set thing there.
Is it ever okay to call a woman fat?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Did you have fun?
Yes, absolutely.
Mike, thank you so much for coming on. Mike, I have four of your pillows. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, awesome.
I have four.
Right on.
And so I want you to tell the folks how to get your books, how to get your pillows and everything.
Right. Okay. You guys, you go to mypillow.com. Everything is there. We've got sheets for $25, any size, any color, because they were canceled in the box store. They're big ordered. Wholesale price right to you. We have this new energy drink. It's the most healthiest energy drink ever. It's good for you. There's no sugar, no caffeine. You get three free hands sent to you absolutely free. We just launched it this week. And then we have our pillows on sale for $18.99 for the queen, $19.99 for the king. We have these little ones, the MyPillow 2.0. And that one, we're doing this one here. If you've never tried one, that in any pillowcase, we have Patriot ones. We have With God, All Things Are Possible. Both of them for $9.98 for the nice cover and the pillow. So to try it. So all these products are over at MyPillow.com. If you don't have a promo code, you all can use promo code Mike. That's easy to remember. M-I-K-E, promo code Mike. And it helps my employees and my employee-owned company. And I'll tell you, we probably wouldn't be here, obviously, first from the grace of God, second for all of you out there supporting myself and my pillow. So I want to thank you all. I have one other thing I want to bring up, too. You can also use that promo code Mike. I built another platform that doesn't get talked about enough. It's called mystore.com. Mystore.com. There's over 2,000 entrepreneurs from all walks of life that have their products up. They're 100% made in the USA, and they don't have other platforms. And you guys, it's like a mini Amazon of USA products. So go there and shop till you drop, and if you use that promo code Mike. And I'll tell you one more, everybody, if you're out there and you're looking for the Lord, you have somebody that's in addiction and he's so incorrigible and you've given up on him, send them to my website. It's free. LindaleRecoveryNetwork.org. They'll go there. They'll be curious because they know I was an ex-crack addict, and it's called your hope match. The first thing they're going to do is put in their age and their addiction. It's going to bring all these people up that their matches that made it through. And they're going to go there. Every one of them addicts out there, they got one thing. They got a phone on them. I guarantee it. That's how they're functioning nowadays. So they can just sit there and check out LindaleRecoveryNetwork.org. It's all free. That's what Keith Ellison in Minnesota is trying to stop. He doesn't want people getting off addiction and finding the Lord.
Amazing. So Mike, I have, in short, because we're totally out of time, and I know you're a businessman and what's the secret to succeeding in business real fast?
You got really fast, you guys. If you're doing a product, really do the home shows and fairs and get feedback from the people, from your customers, okay? And then also do a lot of problem solution. If it's a business, find someone out there you trust that's been in a like business and learn. Do your due diligence. Once you have the business, this is very important. Treat every customer like it's your only customer. Treat every employee like it's your only employee. And treat every vendor out there like it's your only vendor. I had to live when I was living doing one pill show at a time across this country. Everything I had was in that pickup truck. And I would go there and I would want to make that show and cover every customer and treat him like he was my only customer. And you will succeed.
When you were growing up, as a kid growing up, was it in your nature to want to be a business person? Did you know that one day you would have your own business?
Yeah, you know, I only had two jobs in my life where I worked for someone, and that was a drive-in movie theater, which they don't have anymore, and a grocery store. And I always would complain that, you know, at the grocery store, you know, you should do things this way or this way. I remember when I finally got fired for the fourth time, he says, because I would always try and, you know, do things my own way. He says, Mike, you're destined for bigger things. He said, go do your own thing someday. And he goes, you can't be a lifer here. You go out and take chances or whatever. And so I had businesses all my life. And like, but the first one was out of necessity. My sister back in the 1970s or early 80s, she popped a waterbed on the third floor of an apartment building and all the water ran down. Well, I cleaned it up with the carpet cleaning machine. I became a carpet cleaner.
Nice.
I had that business for 2 years. I had a lunch wagon business. You know, I tell everyone out there, you know, it doesn't hurt to try. If you never try, you can talk about things. But if you try, if you fail, you learn from it, everybody. You learn from it, then you get back up and you go again.
Mike, you know? I got to go, man. I can talk to you all day. I got to go. Thank you so much. And thank you all for tuning in. I absolutely appreciate it. Don't forget, the best way to support the Father State is joining our membership program on YouTube or on locals.com. And don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, and all that good stuff. Comment. Let my producer at thefatherstate.tv. If you'd like to see someone else on here, let us know. And check out Punchy's Coffee, my own coffee. JesseLeePeterson.shop. Mike, that was amazing. I knew it would be. You have made my day. Thank you.
God bless you. Thanks for having me on. God bless you, everybody.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody. I'll be.